court will proceed to the third case, In Re New Energy Corp. Mr. Salazar?
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Salazar on behalf of the appellant, Natural Chem Holdings. This is an important case. There are thousands of bankruptcies every year in this country. And in most of those bankruptcies, the assets of the debtor, particularly in a Chapter 11 setting, are going to be sold. And the public policy is to maximize the value received in the context of those sales. I think it's clear, looking at the procedure in this case that has brought us here, that we do need some guidance in this circuit and in this country on the key issues of bidder collusion, the interpretation of 363N, is it limited to the trustee, or can other interested parties invoke the protections of the code? We have some key issues of burden of proof, some issues of discovery, etc. And I think a key factor here is parties such as Natural Chem that bid at these kinds of auctions need certainty that the law is going to be applied in a fair and equitable way. And when we have that certainty, then it makes sense to undertake the rigorous effort to do due diligence, arrange financing, arrange business relationships, and come to the auction fully prepared to make the best bid that you can. Now, the record in this case shows some interesting facts.
I think you need to begin by addressing Section 363N,
sure,
which says that the right person to complain about transactions is the trustee, not a disappointed bidder. How does one get around the language of the statute?
Well, it is correct that the language, by its plain terms, seems to indicate that only the trustee has the ability.
Indeed, and the Supreme Court is rather insistent that we follow statutes rather than find ways to avoid them. So there we are. We have a statute which says that you're not the right person to complain. The trustee appears to be entirely happy with the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, 363M and N are bookend provisions. And
M is different. M says it's too late even if the trustee were complaining. But I asked about N.
Okay. Well, what I can tell you, Your Honor, is the Second Circuit, for example, in the New York Trap Rock case, has applied N where it was the debtor rather than the trustee that was invoking the provisions.
Sometimes, under the bankruptcy code, the debtor in possession has the powers of the trustee. That's true.
Sure.
But bidders at auctions never have the powers of a trustee.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, the In Re Hat case from the bankruptcy Eastern District of California was clearly a situation in which a bidder invoked the provisions of 363N. And so if we look at the relationship of N and M, and I like to do that, N is typically invoked, like Natural Chem did here, in an effort to stop a sale. Natural Chem acted within 2 days of the bankruptcy auction. Came to the bankruptcy court.
Getting away from my question, is there any way your position can be reconciled with the language of N? I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
There's just no way a bidder at an auction can be equated with the trustee, even though the debtor in possession sometimes can be. The whole point of N is that the debtor, the trustee, who is acting for the benefit of all creditors, is the one who decides whether the result of the auction is good. The interests of a bidder are not congruent with the interests of the creditors.
Yeah.
What you want to do is take money away from the creditors when the creditors are happy with the bid. Right? You're antagonistic to the interest of the creditors. Now, that may be good or bad, but the structure of this statute is one in which the person who represents the creditors is the one who makes this decision.
Well, I think, Your Honor, a fair reading of the facts and the posturing of the parties would show that we're trying to...
I'm not interested in a fair reading of the facts. I am interested in a fair reading of the statute. That's why I'm directing your attention to the statute and its language.
Well, Your Honor, what I would refer you to, as the court in New York Trap Rock did, if you look at the legislative history behind 363 and the intent of Congress...
What word in the statute is being disambiguated using legislative history? That's another rule of the Supreme Court. You can't turn to the legislative history unless you have an ambiguous term in the statute, and the legislative history speaks to the meaning of that word. So what word is it that is ambiguous that you want us to turn to the legislative history to understand?
Well, Honor, I will concede that 363N uses the word the trustee may avoid a sale. And certainly if the court wants to apply a narrow interpretation of 363N,
I want to apply the rules as announced by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says, apply the statute as written, don't try to evade it, and don't turn to legislative history unless you need it to disambiguate an ambulatory term. So that's why I'm asking you, what is the ambiguous term that we need to disambiguate?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think there's any debate about what 363N says. On the other hand, as we represented in the district court proceedings, we're now under the auspices of 363N because the sale did occur, and we are challenging that sale on appeal. And the cases are legion under 363M, that an interested party, and there's a realm of interested parties, creditors, debtors, bidders, have the opportunity to invoke 363M. So, well, commentators have viewed 363N and M as bookend provisions where N is used to stop a collusive sale before it occurs. But if it does occur, then you can use M to go up on appeal and seek to have that sale voided. So today we're before this court under M, seeking to have this court void a sale that has taken place. And so whether N is or is not relevant at this point in time, the key is that the ensuing facts that occurred after the bankruptcy hearing have positioned us squarely under 363M. And I would say that the cases are certainly legion that 363M can be used. The Colony Hill case, the Harwall case, all talk about disappointed bidders, unsuccessful bidders, having a right on appeal to challenge the good faith of the buyer. So the position of Natural Chem is going to stand or fall today under 363.
You did not seek a stay, did you, Mr. Salazar?
In the bankruptcy proceedings, we did not seek a stay. The bankruptcy court had waived the automatic 14-day stay. We sought to reinstate it. That was denied. However, relying on 363M, the cases are many that say no stay is necessary, but your challenge then is limited to the issue of good faith. And that's not
what 363M says. It says the reversal or modification on appeal of an authorization, quote, does not affect the validity of a sale or lease under such authorization unless such authorization were stayed pending appeal. That's what it says. It doesn't say anything about good faith. It says shall not affect the validity unless stayed pending appeal. It sounds like you're asking us to ignore the language of 363M as well as the language of 363N.
Well, the cases are many, Your Honor, and again, I would refer to the Colony Hill case, the New York Trap Rock case that says...
Is there any decision of the Supreme Court saying that we should read exceptions into the language of 363M?
I'm not aware of any such case, Your Honor.
No.
But there are many cases...
You must have read the Supreme Court's bankruptcy jurisprudence of the last 20 years.
Sure.
It is absolutely insistent that we follow the language of the statute and not make things up. I can't imagine a more insistent line of jurisprudence than the line that's been established in bankruptcy cases.
Well, there is a pretty insistent line of jurisprudence that says the issue of good faith can be brought up on appeal, whether or not there was a stay obtained in the lower court proceedings. And that's the basis that we're here today. We're limited to that sole issue of good faith. We understand that. And that gets us to trying to unravel the facts from the lower court.
What decision of the Supreme Court would you say gives most support to that approach?
I'm not aware that the Supreme Court has addressed the 363 MRN case.
No, last year, the Supreme Court rejected quite loudly an effort to read exceptions into a provision of the bankruptcy code in a decision, a unanimous decision, saying this is never to be done. Just follow the language as written. How would one disregard decisions like that?
Well, Your Honor, if we read 363M, it says, does not affect the validity of a sale to an entity that purchased in good faith. And that's why we're here today. We're saying they did not purchase in good faith. And the cases are many cited in our briefs that a bidder such as Natural Chem has the right on appeal to litigate the question of good faith. And we have provided ample evidence to the court at all levels of the bid collusion that happened in this particular proceeding. So, you know, if we look at the facts as to what happened here, and we understand that the court's going to have to decide, can the good faith issue be raised on appeal where there was not a stay obtained in the lower court proceedings? And our position is that, yes, there are many cases from various circuits that support that position. We're limited to good faith. In the Harwall case, they tried to bring up the issue of antitrust violations, and the court said you can't do that. You're limited to good faith. And if we can talk a little bit about the facts here, I don't think there's any real debatable question as to whether there was or was not bid collusion. We have two bidders who started out bidding against each other, and about an hour and a half into the auction, on the phone, they say, why don't we bid together? Let's form a joint venture. And, in fact, they formed a joint venture right then in the middle of the auction. And as a result of that decision, two strong bidders dropped out of the bidding. And they said, we're going to reappear as one entity, a joint venture. We're no longer going to bid against each other. You have to ask yourself, what was the purpose of the formation of that joint venture? If we look again at the New York Trap Rock case, it goes into great detail. There are some agreements that are fine, that have the an indirect, unintentional impact on price. If we look at that case, Lone Star Industries and New York Trap Rock, in that particular case, they found there was bidder collusion because one of the bidders entered into an agreement to drop out of the bidding so that the other bidder could buy the assets of the cement company for $38 million rather than $55. So that's a very blatant example of an agreement by bidders to drop out of the process of bidding that has a negative impact on the value that the estate's going to receive. Now, if the agreement in Trap Rock had been that these two cement companies were going to build a new cement plant right down the road from the Lone Star facility, and because of that new, more efficient, modern cement plant coming into operation, that depressed the value of the asset being sold. Well, that's okay, because their agreement was to build a new cement plant. That's going to affect market dynamics. But in that particular case, the agreement was drop out of the bidding. You'll win the bidding not at $55 million, but you'll win it at $38. And we're then going to share that $17 million savings. I think the case before the court is very similar to that. They won the bidding at $2.5 million. About 100 days later, they resold it for $8.5 million.
But, Ms. Sally, this was marketed for, what, a year and a half unsuccessfully?
In the bankruptcy proceeding, they do indicate they had undertaken about 1 year of bidding. A lot of bidders, such as Natural Chem, that had bid at many auctions, never got notice of it, so I'm not sure how comprehensive it was. But it is fair to look at the subsequent disposition of assets to see what the true market value was at a given point in time. Now, Natural Chem submitted two bids, one at $10 million, $1 million down, $9 million over time, also a lease option at $4 million, and that was really more reflective of the market. And so it wasn't surprising to us that the liquidators soon thereafter were able to get $8.5 million for the assets. I see I'm now kind of into my rebuttal time, Your Honor, so I will save further remarks for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Mr. Graham?
Good Good morning. May it please the Court. The appellees, Your Honor, agree with the contention of the appellant and actually with the panel that 363M is what really decides this case. And that's because the undisputed facts are as follows. There was a bankruptcy court sale. That sale order was not stayed by the bankruptcy court or the district court. There was a finding in the sale order that it was a sale to a good faith purchaser. Therefore, Your Honors, under the operation of 363M, the explicit text of the bankruptcy code, there is nothing in this appeal that Natural can get relief. It was a sale to a good faith purchaser that was not stayed. Therefore, there's no relief that can be granted because the sale cannot be upset by any ruling on appeal. Based upon that, this complicated multi-issue appellant brief boils down to just the operation of this simple statute. We agree with the court that there's explicit language here that bars the appeal. There's no decision by the Seventh Circuit that delves into the issue raised in the appellant's brief and by other circuits of whether or not you can challenge good faith. The reliance in Henry Harwell is a Bankruptcy Act case. There was no 363M at the time. To the extent that that decision is applicable, even I don't think it applies here because there was no corresponding code section under the Act. So the reasoning there would not address the textual language of 363M. We also agree that to the extent they try to lodge an appeal under 363N, there is no grounds there. It does say trustee. The cases cited by the appellant are only cases where the trustee tried to set it aside, or a debtor in possession, which has the powers of a trustee, as Justice Easterbrook stated. Neither of these code sections grant any standing for Natural Chem to appeal. They're simply, they had their chance to bid. They were not a successful bidder. The sale was not stayed and was made to a good faith purchaser. Under the statute 363M, that ends the inquiry by this court and any other court as to whether or not the results should be set aside. Other issues, just to briefly raise, Your Honor, he raises the issue about the subsequent sale of the plant. That's beyond the record and doesn't need to be considered. But even if it was, Judge Flom correctly states, this was marketed for years before the bankruptcy, was marketed extensively through the bankruptcy, and our bid was $2.5 million. It was the highest and best bid at a public auction. It simply was the best we could do. One of the main goals of the bankruptcy code is to maximize creditor recovery. Here, the debtor, its financial consultant, the Department of Energy, a secure creditor, the creditors committee, did all they could to maximize that recovery. It was done at a public auction. But what we have now, Your Honor, is an interloper, as dubbed by the bankruptcy court, which has expended significant time and energy of the debtor, of the secured parties, of the creditor committee, significantly reducing an already limited recovery to creditors, all on an issue that was barred because there was no stay and there was a sale to a good faith purchaser. I can address other questions if Your Honors have them. However, we, the appellee, especially the debtor appellee New Energy Corp., believes that the text of 363M shuts the door effectively on all issues on this appeal, and therefore the decisions of the bankruptcy court and the district court should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Newell?
May it please the Court, I'm Margaret Newell from the Department of Justice. I'm here representing the United States and specifically the Department of Energy. Your Honors, the United States has a consistent position with the Debtors' Council as expressed in the arguments stated here. I've just reserved some time in case the Court has any questions for the United States specifically, and otherwise the United States would rest on its brief and the arguments already presented for the appellees.
Apparently not. Thank you, Ms. Newell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please affirm the District Court's opinion. Thank you.
Ms. Groh?
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the successful joint venture purchaser and would similarly like to suggest that the purchasers are aligned with, obviously, the Debtors' Council as well as the United States. I guess I would like to make one point, which is this is a classic case that underscores this very significant and important policies why standing in bankruptcy court cases seeking appellate review of bankruptcy orders is the very narrow pecuniary interest person aggrieved test. Bankruptcies are hubs of activity with entire organizations going into court supervision, myriads of parties, administration, difficulties. If any person who simply would like to have had the opportunity to have made some money can bring and have standing in an appellate course, the policies behind the bankruptcy's rules as reflected in this court's case in Andrechetti would be disarrayed. That's my only point, unless the court has any other questions. Otherwise, the purchasers rest on their briefs and ask the court to affirm the district court and bankruptcy court's order.
Thank you, Mr. Crowe. Mr. Salazar.
Your Honor, another concept widely articulated by the courts has been that of unfair advantage. If the debtor or the trustee accords one of the bidders an unfair advantage, that also is grounds for voiding the sale. Here, if we look at what happened, all bidders were told you have to put up a $3 million deposit before the sale order hearing, and you have to have a $750,000 deposit the day you sign the asset purchase agreement. The auction was on the 31st of January. That agreement was signed on the 1st of February, the very next day. They never provided that $750,000 deposit. The hearing was 2 days later. They never provided the $3 million deposit, yet Natural Chem had been told they were mandatory. So it's not appropriate for the debtor or his creditors to play the game that way, where they accord an unfair advantage to one bidder versus another bidder. That in and of itself, I think, deprived the estate of millions of dollars of asset value. Now, Mr. Crowe in his brief specifically referenced that we've sold the plant to a third party. And through discovery and supplemental information, we wanted an opportunity to establish the price. We know as an offer proof that it would be $8.5 million. And Mr. Crowe can dispute that if he so likes. But that's an additional basis for avoiding the sale. We can't have a Wild West situation where they allow one bidder to have one set of rules, and then the other bidder is told, you've got to put up to $3 million. And the other guy's let off the hook. Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate
Thank
your time
you,
today.
Salazar. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.